Hey everyone, today's episode is super important. I had Dr. Gleb Sipirsky, the disaster avoidance expert, and we discussed why people make bad decisions and how important it is to make the right decisions during uncertain times. I'm sure you're as interested as I am, so join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have Dr. Gleb Sipirsky. He is the CEO of Disaster Avoidance Expert. We could not have a more relevant guest on The Playbook. He's written two books. One has come out already, and that is the book was called Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. I wish some people have read this book already, Doctor. And the new book coming out is even more relevant, The Blind Spots Between Us, How to Overcome Unconscious Cognitive Bias and Build Better Relationships. Welcome to The Playbook, my friend. This is going to be an extraordinary segment because, number one, you and I grew up in not so abundant means. And I think, you know, in that state of struggle, we learn a lot about decision-making at a young age. And you deal with the conscious, subconscious, and unconscious mind like I do, that continuum that allows us to make quick decisions. I'm going to start off by giving you a philosophy that I have. I wrote a book called Game Time Decision-Making, utilizing the biggest names in sports and entertainment by their stories to facilitate what and how to make good decisions. I believe the key to making a good decision, number one, is to know your values and to take inventory of your personal, experiential, giving, and receiving values. That allows us to quickly distinguish the best decision in a quick manner. Does that have any relevance to the truth? You're much more scholarly about this than I am.
Sure, David. So first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. And this is indeed a really important time to learn about decision-making. Think about decision-making because a lot of folks are making a lot of bad decisions around the current pandemic. This is a bad time to make, you know, to make bad decisions. So regarding what you're talking about, the values, it's really important to know our values in order to make decisions. And at the same time, it's important to understand there's a difference between our values, which are emotion-driven, and the right strategic decisions, which should be logic-driven, rationality-driven. So we need to separate those values that inform our long-term goals. So what you're talking about is very important for our long-term goals, what we want to achieve. But if we use those immediate intuitions to make short-term decisions, tactical decisions, we're often going to go off tracks. So we need to know our own faults, our own problems in decision-making. Lots of people have their own faults and problems, and our minds, everyone's mind, has specific failure points called cognitive biases, and that's what I study. What are the failure points in our decision-making? How can we address them? And especially in the current context of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have a lot of failure points that are specific to us as human beings. So all human beings have failure points, and that these cognitive biases is what I study.
And, you know, it's interesting because I teach in entrepreneurship. The one ignored factor in entrepreneurship is credibility. And you and I were discussing previously, I'd love for you to share your playbook or your journey of what makes you qualified to help people in these, you know, as the CEO of the disaster avoidant expert. You know, you and I were sharing, I'm blown away. He looks like he's 18 years old, but
share
with us, you know, where the credibility comes from your knowledge base, your skills that you're utilizing, as well as the perspective that you take.
I've always been fascinated with decisions, how we make our decisions, partially because as a kid, I saw my parents making some really bad financial decisions. So for example, my dad was a real estate agent, and so he made quite a lot of money occasionally, and sometimes he made very little money because it's business based on commissions. There was about a 6-month period where he made a lot of money and he hid it from my mom, actually invested into buying an apartment elsewhere, leased it out to some folks. When she found out about it in a couple of years, she was very pissed, very angry, very upset, big blowout fight. And as a result, they separated for a while. So I lived with my mom, then saw my dad very rarely. And that really prompted me, that really impacted me, really prompted me to think about why we make such bad decisions as human beings and how can we make better decisions. Nobody taught me that in school. Nobody taught me that in college. So I decided to study this myself. And I just started teaching about it as I started studying it, doing consulting, coaching, and training. I've been doing that for 20 years for business leaders, ranging from entrepreneurial startups to Fortune 500 companies from Aflac to Xerox. And you know, if anyone knows Zappos, give me a call. Now that's been one aspect of what I do. Now, pretty soon after I started studying decision making, I realized that the popular literature on decision making was very lacking. So I went into academia and I became a cognitive neuroscientist and behavioral economist. So I've been researching this topic as an academic for over 15 years. I've taught for 7 years at Ohio State, so go Bucks. And you know, that's
big,
been...
You know, I'm a big Buck fan. You just won me over. Excellent. Now the guy has 100% credibility. He just...
Perfect. Yep, and that's what my background is like. So I wrote a number of books. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to move into, you know, I always talk about, you know, uncertain times. And for me, the future is always uncertain, which creates anxiety, which I'm sure you know very well from your teaching. I believe that when things change dramatically day by day, that the future becomes compressed, which causes a heightened awareness to anxiety, which some people actually feel as if the anxiety or the uncertainty is in the present. But, you know, we're just catching up with what's already happened, in my opinion. So, you know, how can people make decisions in times of uncertainty?
In times of uncertainty, people really need to know and understand how our decisions go wrong in a particularly powerful way. In times of more confidence, more stability, it's less important, but in times of uncertainty, it's more important. That comes from how our brain is wired. So our brain is wired in a way that's not adapted to the modern environment. That's the fundamental, if you take away one thing from this interview, you need to remember that. We are not wired for the modern environment. Our instincts, our intuitions, they're not wired for the modern environment. They're wired for the savanna environment. When we lived in small tribes of 15 to 150 people, we were hunters, foragers, and gatherers. And we had, you might have heard of this, as a very strong fight or flight response. Now, that was a very great response to threats in the savanna environment. When threats were intense and immediate, we had to jump at 100 shadows to get away from that one saber-toothed tiger. You might have heard of that as the saber-toothed tiger response. Now, you might notice in the modern environment, there are many less saber-toothed tigers, but we still respond to threats as though they're saber-toothed tigers. So we have a very immediate response to threats, and we don't think about the long term. So right now, a lot of people are responding to the COVID-19 pandemic with a very short-term threat response. They're going and buying a lot of toilet paper. They're going and buying a lot of supplies. You know, they're doing things to protect themselves from others. Gun sales and ammo sales are very much up as well, for example. Now, will you need guns and ammo? Most likely not. Very unlikely to actually need those.
What about the toilet paper? Are they going to need the toilet paper?
Well, only if you're really scared and you're and you're doing, you know, the kind of thing that comes when you're scared,
yeah.
Which I won't say in this podcast, but you know what I mean. Yeah. So that you don't need that much toilet paper. And the problem is that people aren't thinking about the long-term consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic, which we can go into. But the term kind of things that we are very much not built intuitively to respond to is long-term impacts. And we can talk about specific cognitive biases there. Is we're not built to respond to the future that is going to be different than the past. And that is another kind of problem that we don't build, that we don't respond to. And we don't respond well to having our plans changed. We do not respond well to that. So those are the three big problems from slow-moving train wrecks like the COVID-19 pandemic. And I can talk about the specific cognitive biases that are at heart here.
Yeah, I would like to discuss two things through the interview. One would be, what do we do today to make the best decisions for today? Right? Because there's going to be a stabilization period that is today. And then moving forward, there is opportunity and you know, real opportunity changes lives. And it's interesting you brought up change. What was the old saying that the only thing, only people that like change is a wet baby?
Yes. So, yep.
Anyway, you know, let's address the first issue. We're all faced with key decisions today, you know, whether to lay off employees, whether to close our business, you know, whether to leave our homes. You know, some of these could be life or death decisions depending on our age and our health. You know, how do we, and, you know, give me the cognizance side of it, you know, make good decisions today? And then how do we make decisions for the future when things get back to a new normal?
Those questions are actually very much related, because we can't make good decisions for today without keeping the future in mind. And we are very intuitively not keeping the future in mind. And that's a big problem for us. So let's talk about the specific cognitive biases. And these have academic names, which I'll name right now. You don't need to know the names, you need to know the principle. The normalcy bias is one of these cognitive biases. Our intuition is to assume that the future will be normal, that the future will be similar to today. So right now, the large majority of people out there think that eventually, after the COVID-19 crisis passes, everything will go back to like it was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. It will not go back to that, partially because people aren't thinking about how long the crisis will be. Now, if we look at the best studies of how long the COVID-19 crisis will be, whether it's the WHO, the CDC, they're all saying that we will have the COVID-19 pandemic going on until we have a vaccine that's been mass produced and distributed and everyone has been vaccinated. We will not have a vaccine that's effective at least for the next 18 months. That's the kind of thing you hear from top health expert, Dr. Fauci, and so on. So 18 months until a vaccine. Then it will take about another 18 months to produce enough of the vaccine, then distribute it to where it needs to be, then have everyone vaccinated. So we will be dealing with this pandemic in the most optimistic scenario, where the first vaccine we get is effective, fully 100% effective. That will be 3 years. Now, more pessimistic scenarios, maybe it will take 5 years. In the more pessimistic scenario, really pessimistic, the vaccine we get against the COVID-19 pandemic will be, COVID-19 coronavirus will be similar to the flu vaccine, which is only 50% effective. So if it's only 50% effective to prevent the COVID-19, we'll only have a 50% decrease in death rates. That means we'll be dealing with it throughout our whole lifetimes. So our future will not be similar to the past. If we have to sit at home for the next 3 years, or have periods of restrictions and loosenings, we will have major, major social dislocation, social dynamics, economic changes. So we need to realize that the future will be very different than the past. And we need to think about that future, because that's where we'll be operating. So we need to inform our decisions about today by what we're thinking about the future. And here are a couple of other cognitive biases that are going to be at play. One is called the planning fallacy. Now, we like our plans. We're very confident of ourselves, about our plans, very optimistic about them. So we think our lives will go according to plan. Well, as we see with the COVID-19, there can be a major, major train wreck that takes our lives, our businesses, outside of our plans.
I would say in business, and I'm the emotional intelligence side of your incredible academic intelligence, but I always tell people, if you want to make God laugh, come up with a well-developed.
Yes. Yep.
There's the cognitive reason why.
Yep, that's exactly why. So you want to not be nearly as confident about your plans, and you want to be more flexible and resilient, and build in much more flexibility and resilience, additional resources into your plans than you think you'll need. And finally, hyperbolic discounting. Now, this is a cognitive bias that refers to us greatly undercounting future outcomes, future gains, for the sake of short-term gains. And the kind of decisions you make for the short term are not going to help you in the long term. So you want to think about the long term, and you make your decisions right now in such a way that fit the long term. Now, that means you want to think about cash flow. That doesn't mean you not caring about cash flow, not caring about these things. You want to think about the cash flow. So you want to think about what the world will be like, let's say in the moderate scenario, where we'll be dealing with the pandemic for the next 5 years. Not the most pessimistic scenario, but the moderate scenario. So the first vaccine won't be effective. It'll take a couple of years to produce an effective vaccine and get everyone vaccinated. That'll be 5 years altogether. So what will your business be like if you have the kind of disruptions that you're dealing with for in the next 5 years? In certain areas of business, I'm just going to be fully straightforward and honest here, you want to be thinking about getting out of that business. So if that means cutting your losses, laying off your employees and leaving, sorry to be brutal, but that's what it means. Entertainment businesses are going to be vastly, vastly decreased. Movie business, whatever. Depending on your business, those are going to be bad businesses to be in. So
I have a question just from a business.
Sure.
Because some people will misinterpret what you say. Because when you're talking about, sports and entertainment, movies, etc., I believe that in the traditional sense, right, we need to pivot. We need to re-engineer, but I also see a different side of it, which is huge opportunity.
Yes, and I'm going to talk about because that
people
too.
People still want to be entertained. Sports are still going to be perform. I mean, sports is historically, I mean, it is up there. Gambling, sports, and you know, I won't even mention the other career that has been all the way from the time of the beginning of time. You know, if you're in businesses that seem to need re-engineering, what a great opportunity to be at the forefront of that engineering.
I absolutely agree, David. And so that depends on what kind of activity associated with sports you're doing. If you're running an arena, you're probably not going to be in business. But if you're running a sports team, if you're running a sports team, then that, so it's kind of like, the arena is not really going to be in business, but the sports team, that will still be in business. You know, the concert hall venue will not be in business, but the entertainer will be in business.
How long is it going to be till we can have mass events with mass amounts of people?
Realistically, in the most optimistic scenario, about 3 years.
Really?
Yep. So you, I mean, I just counted it out, you know, 18 months until a vaccine.
So you think before the vaccine, we can't have huge gatherings. What size of gatherings do you think we'll be able to have before the vaccine in the 3 years? What types of gatherings?
Realistically, we should not have gatherings more than 10 people if we want to stay safe. Now, it depends on which area of the country you're in and what the, you know, episode outbreaks are going to be like. But more than 10 people in most areas of the country, especially the harder hit ones. I mean, I'm here in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, go Bucks. Like I said, it's not very hard hit, but our governor is doing the wise thing and stay having a shelter at home order because he foresees how bad things will be if we don't do this. So depending on the country, depending on the governor, but realistically speaking, you don't want to bet your business on the fact that you'll have gatherings of more than 10 people for more than a couple of months at a time. So that means that community activities really do not want to be in that business. Try to get out of that business. Now, on the other hand, what David is saying is absolutely right. This is a wonderful opportunity for you to reinvent your business. So you want to be thinking right now what your business model will look like if the next 5 years are going to be a series of restrictions, you know, maybe a couple of months of loosening and then restrictions again once the COVID-19 has a secondary breakout, which is what's happening in countries around the world like Hong Kong. Hong Kong, very well-developed city, more developed than most cities in the US, and it had restrictions. Things went fine, then it loosened restrictions, it had a secondary breakout and had another set of restrictions. That's what will happen here. It's clear that this is what will happen here. So be ready for that. You don't want to bet on long periods of loosening. Bet on having restrictions, changing your business model in such a way as to have virtual service delivery. If you're an entertainer or whatever you're doing, virtual service delivery to your customers, to your clients, and you need to change your internal systems. So not only your external business model, but your internal systems and processes have to be virtual teams. This is what's it's going to be, overwhelmingly virtual teams. Right now, most people are working from home, and it works for a couple of weeks if you are just going on adrenaline and excitement and so on. But how will you replace all these functions that you need to have for the long term as adrenaline and excitement wears out? How will you replace team meetings, effective team meetings? How will you replace effective motivation, effective accountability, effective supervision, effective problem solving? All of these things right now, you're taking care of them in the office. Naturally, normally, you have systems and processes in place. You'll have to change all of that around in order to accommodate working at home in virtual teams. This is going to be complex.
If a small business can stay in business, it seems to me the small business has a huge upper hand because yes, they're able to leverage so much more and level the playing field to the huge operating companies that have to completely re-engineer, restaff, reformat, you know, because they're built on, you know, my favorite things as a consultant like you, because you do a lot of consulting into the Fortune 500 as well, is one of the things I attack right away is stop having meetings to have meetings.
Yes.
Right. Like, you know, yeah. I created a 5:20 rule where, you know, my phone calls, my objective is to keep it to 5 minutes because anything after that is visiting, and my meetings should be 20 minutes with exceptions, of course, but your average meeting, you should have an objective to get it done within 20 minutes because it's just visiting afterwards. Mm-hmm. Well, now, you know, in the large companies that you're fighting just to have meetings, to re-engineer that corporate mindset. And I'm going to finish up with the question about mindset. You know, what can we, I believe mindset's a practice.
Yes.
You're an expert in the mind side of the business acumen of disaster, but also of decision making, which can be in good times as well. What types of practices can we have to take advantage of a strong mindset during a period of change?
What we need to have is something that you alluded to earlier, David, in the interview, where you want to think about a variety of scenarios. Don't have black and white thinking about the future. Have a variety of scenarios. Have a variety of things that can happen in a context of uncertainty. So when you're talking about uncertainty, it's uncertain if you are just kind of sitting there and being anxious and worried about the future. But think about what can happen. Think about the wide variety of scenarios that can happen. The optimistic scenario, the moderate scenario, and the pessimistic scenario. What does that look like for you? What does that look like for your company? As a small business especially, you're much more nimble than the large guys out there. So if you're able to think about all of these scenarios, what those look like for you, how will you adapt your strategic plan for each of them, and what evidence will you have that it's either optimistic, moderate, or pessimistic, then you'll be much better off than the large guys out there, and you'll be much better off, better able, better prepared for whatever the future brings you if you envision this future and if you then know which of these futures you're actually moving to.
And finally, the last piece of advice, you know, you have a wealth of knowledge. You look like you're 18, but we know you're older than that. This is what Ohio Living does for you. So
I know it's great.
This is a great commercial for the Buckeye State and Ohio State. But moreover, in this time that we're living in, where I believe uncertainty is compressed, and the ego-based emotions are relevant and apparent. What is the best piece of advice that you can give people today?
Avoid the fight or flight fear response. So much of our decision-making in a time of crisis comes from fear, anxiety, and uncertainty. You do not want to give in to that response. Remember, all of your competitors will generally be giving in to that response. You don't want to follow the herd. This is one of the reasons why Warren Buffett and other folks like him have made so much money. They know not to follow the herd. So figure out what your fear and anxiety is driving you to do. Then check those responses, figure out what will actually get you to your long-term goals and follow that route, because that is going to be the best thing that you can do to take advantage of the current environment, reinvent yourself, beat out your competitors, and have the best outcome going forward.
I know I lied because that was supposed to be the final, just came to me though. Do you meditate?
Yes, I meditate every day for at least 10 minutes, sometimes longer.
Yeah, I meditate 20 minutes a day. I think what you were saying is how I started practicing staying out of the ego-based or fear-based consciousness. And everyone should take it and hear it here. We have Gleb Sadorsky, Dr. Gleb Sadorsky. Please check him out. I'd love to invite you on an Instagram Live as well, so my audience could ask you questions as well. So we'll do that. Yeah. What a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for your insight. It really has shifted. I think out of any playbook I've done, I always look for quantitative value. I think I've made more money by doing this podcast for myself. So if anyone's listening and watching, quantify and quantitate what he's given you, because we have some huge gems on how to stabilize what we're doing today, but also take advantage of what's going to happen in the future with several different plans. The conservative, of course, the accelerated and the moderate plans, make sure that we all take care of ourselves. One thing we didn't talk about, which I know as well through meditation, your health is most important. So none of this even matters if we get sick. So please remember, happiness is the greatest virus. It's spread by people witnessing it. Stay happy, stay healthy. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Playbook, but more importantly, I want you to join my text community. I'm doing a lot of fun things there, one-on-one conversations, trainings, giveaways, and it's the first place I release all the information that I'm giving. So join me at my text platform, 949-298-2905. That's 949-298-2905. Join my exclusive community.